From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
And I'm Marcy Silman. We're about a month away from the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia. Athletes and spectators from around the world are going to be flooding into that coastal town. Jill Doherty's been covering Russia for more than 30 years at CNN, and she came by the studios the other day to explain what's happening in Sochi and across Russia ahead of these games.
You know, if you looked at a map, it really does help to look at a map. But let's say Sochi is in the west of this region. It could be described as a former, almost like the Miami of Russia.
Perfect for winter
generous.
Games.
Yeah, exactly, which is what some people have said. Why are you doing, again, the Olympics in, you know, this resort spot? But it does have mountains. It has beautiful mountains. So you can actually, you know, ski and swim practically at the same time. But if you start going east, you begin to encounter some of the areas that are more unstable. You get into Volgograd, where those attacks took place. Volgograd is a big funneling point for transportation coming in and out of the region. So it's a natural that they would want to hit that. Go farther east, you encounter Dagestan. If that rings a bell, remember the Boston bombings?
I do.
Okay, the two guys who have been implicated in that spent time when they were little kids. They were in that region, and one of them went back to that region, you know, pretty recently, within the last few years. It's an area where I almost have to move east on our map to Chechnya, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with. Chechnya used to be a war zone. And then after a couple of wars, Russia pacified it. The Kremlin put a lot of money into Chechnya. And basically now it is ruled by a man, his name is Kadyrov, who's the son of the assassinated leader, who is a friend of the Kremlin. And he has pretty much kept the no-goodniks out of there. But where have they gone? They've gone into Dagestan. So Dagestan is very unstable. And that's where that's the locus of terrorism right now in Russia.
So essentially what you were saying about Vladimir Putin's power to keep this out of the very specific Sochi areas, he's going to deploy a massive military force to make sure that that venue is secure. Mm-hmm. But all hell could be breaking loose in other parts of the country, particularly in that area, while these games happen or even, you know, before and after.
Yes, I think that's really the way you have to look at it. I mean, it's not only military. It's really, you know, police, their version of the FBI. In fact, the United States FBI will be there. They're there already. Because after all, the U.S. is not responsible for security at the games. That's Russia's responsibility. But the U.S. is responsible for security of our athletes. So you have the FBI, but mainly you have the State Department. Diplomatic security, as it's called, and they're responsible for security.
Jill Doherty's with us, and we're talking about the buildup to protecting the area around Sochi, Russia, before the Olympics start. But wider than that, this is not just about the games, because it seems that Putin is at stake in some sense. For 2.5 weeks, the world is going to be looking at him and his country. And
very true.
We notice building up to this, he started to free some political prisoners, maybe most notably banned members of Pussy Riot, who were so infamously jailed.
Yes.
But this seems really like he's trying to, polish the silver in anticipation of guests coming in, but tarnish may lurk behind.
Well, right. I mean, you have, Khodorkovsky, the, you know, magnate, oil magnate,
right,
who's been in jail, actually in a work camp prison for 10 years. He was freed. He's now in Europe. You have Pussy Riot girls out, unrepentant, ready to continue to criticize the government and work for the rights of people in prison. However, at the same time, you have an American journalist whose name is David Satter. And this just happened this week, very recently, where Satter was made persona non grata by the Russian government. He is a journalist who's been quite critical of the Kremlin. He wrote a book. He also works for Radio Liberty, RFERL, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, which are not popular in Russia.
So he is expelled, not jailed, he's expelled from the country. Are you anticipating expulsion of more journalists who are trying to cover what's going on?
You know, not necessarily. And when I said not popular, I meant that facetiously. It's actually pretty popular, but the Kremlin doesn't like it because it's American financed. No, I think Satter was a person who, because he had been critical, was an easy target for them. And especially since he was working with RFERL, it puts him on the other side of the, let's say, the more critical side, objective slash critical side of the ledger. But I think that it is a sign. It's a message, just as Pussy Riot was a message and just as Khodorkovsky is a message. So all of these, I think, are that alternately they're an expression by Putin that he can basically do what he wants.
Yeah.
If he wants to free someone and make a point, he's made the point with Khodorkovsky. The Pussy Riot girls, he continued to say, well, you know, maybe we ought to be kinder to them. And so they've been in, or at least close to 2 years in prison. And it's a message to other people not to try it. And I think Satter is a message to journalists to watch it. And when they're Western journalists, this does not happen a lot. It's a message to them to watch out.
Well, he's about to see an influx of tens of thousands of journalists, and most of them will be focused on who skis the fastest or who spins the best on their ice skate tip. But I would imagine that there are some other journalists who won't be able to help themselves from noticing stories. So how is he going to contain these people? Or is this just a message to them, I can do this to you?
Well, I think, you know, just look at the physical location. You need badges. You need accreditation. You can't just float in there and start reporting. You have to be accredited. And so if they, right from the bat, you know, off the bat, if they don't like your reporting, you're not going to get a visa.
And that's it.
That's number one. And then number two, when you get in there, there are only certain places that people can even demonstrate. They just opened up demonstrations and they said, no, please come. If you want to demonstrate, it's fine. But there's only one location, as I understand it, where they can demonstrate. Will that even be close to cameras? Will cameras be able to get up to that location? Not clear. So I think you, again, have to think that this is going to be very locked down.
It's fascinating to hear about because I am old enough to remember very well the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And
so do I.
and this theoretically is a Russia that's post-Cold War, but this certainly sounds a lot like a strong man in the Kremlin taking a semi-defiant attitude toward the West.
You know, it's different, though. I mean, I would say we both remember the Soviet Union.
Yes.
I think it's different. It's not the Soviet Union. There was no internet when the Soviet Union existed. And the internet plays a very important role. A lot of young people, by the way, aren't watching TV. It's just like here. They're not watching TV, which is a central way of getting information out in Russia. And when they explain why they're doing things, it's not like, let's send the KGB in and arrest everybody. It's much more subtle. It's, you know, there might be violations that they find in the building where an organization that's critical is renting.
I see.
And perhaps the fire department ought to come and make sure that you haven't really put in, you know, do you put in the back entrance? It's all done kind of indirectly for the most part.
So going back to the big picture, we've looked at some of these small things, and you pull that camera back to look at Sochi, which is an odd metaphor for somebody in radio, but I'll pull my microphone back. Mm-hmm. It seems that Vladimir Putin has quite a bit riding on a nonviolent, successful games with hopefully some snow and ice for these winter sports to take place. Would it affect him domestically if these games were not successful?
I think the Sochi Olympics are very, very important to Vladimir Putin domestically and internationally. Domestically, he wants to show his people that he can pull off a very big deal. I mean, these Olympics are costing $51 billion, more than any other Olympics in the history of mankind.
Wow.
And by the way, there are smaller Olympics than the Summer Olympics. So actually, if you looked at it, you know, dollar for dollar, person to person, it's very expensive. Now, why would he spend that much money? Well, again, this puts Russia into the big leagues. They got the Olympics. Everyone's going to be watching. So it's a big deal for him, the leader who can pull this off successfully. Internationally, also, it puts Russia into the big leagues. People around the world are going to be watching. If they can present a friendly, successful picture to the world, it will help Vladimir Putin. And when you look at that location, you know, think of that location, again, getting back to our map, it is closer to the Middle East. It's closer to Iran than it is to Moscow. So you're in way in the south, around the Black Sea. It's a multi-ethnic area. It has a lot of Islamic people. So there are a lot of soft power, in quotes, messages. We, too, are, you know, a country that accepts people of all religions and all backgrounds. We have things in common with people around the world. There's a lot of, you know, soft power image that's being projected by these games.
That's Jill Doherty. She's a retiring foreign affairs correspondent for CNN. She used to be based in Moscow. She was speaking at the University of Washington's Ellis Center, and you can see that talk at our website, kuw.org.